All right. One, two, three.
Welcome back to the Pocho Podcast number 3. I'm Lalo Alcaraz, and I'm joined, as always, by the lovely Al Madrigal. Welcome back, Al.
Hey. Yeah, we're doing it.
Today on the Pocho Cast, we talk about Arizona and Tucson. What's up? What's in the water? We also talk about dead celebrities and one dead artist who is now walking into the light. Also, the Pew Hispanic study about identity. Don't call me Hispanic, if you know what I mean. And also, do you like tacos? I do. We're going to talk to Gustavo Arellano, author of Taco USA, on the Pocho Cast. Tucson will never stop giving, apparently. Well, Arizona will never stop giving. But I keep telling people I won the LA Press Club Award, Best Editorial Cartoon Award last year for my portfolio on Arizona cartoons because, god dang it, it's so easy. They just lend themselves. But, man, it is just nonstop action over there. They recently, obviously, embarrassed themselves yet again. Well, earlier this year, God, it was Jan Brewer sticking her finger in Barack Obama's face.
Sure.
More recently,
doesn't she look like? And have I said this before? She looks like the old lady in Something About Mary that Cameron Diaz.
That's gross.
She is, yeah, it sounded like that woman should be holding down the end of a bar at a trailer park.
Oh, nah. She should be, she's like human beef jerky.
Yeah.
She looks like. But, yeah, Jan Brewer, all the, you know, the excellence in the quality of the elected officials in Arizona is just amazing. And I know that recently on this program called The Daily Show, really, by their senior Latino correspondent, really embarrassed Michael Hicks is his name, right? What was his position? He's with the Tucson Unified School District. He's not like their figurehead, is he?
No. There's just board members. And again, I probably should. I can't even go into it that much. And nor do I want to. I mean,
yeah.
I just, with the end result of all of this, is it, you know, is that just, you end up feeling bad for the people of Tucson and of Arizona. Because it's just nonstop. And we've talked about this, but I mean, you really could. And I mean, how many cartoons and strips have you had dedicated to Arizona? It's constant.
I have, you know, when George Bush was president, I had to call a moratorium on George Bush cartoons because it was just overwhelming. So I may have hit that point with Arizona.
It's shocking how what they're forced to deal with on a regular basis. And it just seems like Tucson, I have a buddy that lives there, a comedian, Robert Mack, and he was telling me, no, it's just that Tucson is this blue dot, and it's really cool, and it's as far as cities go in Arizona, it's this, you know, liberal sort of oasis. And I haven't seen anything to that effect. I mean, everything, wow. It seems like just a tougher spot as any, or more difficult for just common sense. I mean, I'm not even talking about right, left, or anything. I'm just talking about just rational thought and decision-making to be going on. It doesn't make sense. We talked about the three Sonorans. Do you want to get into that at all?
Yeah, three Sonorans. A.B. Morales is the most, well, let me back it up a second. The three Sonorans was hosted on a blog, was super popular blog, hosted on a website called the Tucson Citizen, which was is a property of Gannett Newspapers and was a newspaper itself. And my comic strip La Cucaracha actually ran in the Tucson Citizen. Until the whole thing folded, you know, I mean, they ended up just going internet only presence, and now it's just a series blogs, and Three Sonoras was a hard-hitting, muckraking, 1.6 million hit-generating blog by this writer who was, I think he's getting his master's in math education. I'm not sure if I'm wrong, but he's the second Latino mathematician that I am very familiar with. And
they sort of became popular because of the whole Gabby Gifford. He was the first one to break that news, and I think that's where they generated a lot of their initial attention. Is that correct? I mean,
so. Yeah. And then since then, he's been really hitting the Tucson Unified and all the local, you know, as you would expect in a kind of a one-horse town, the local politics, it can get pretty up in your face and dirty. And,
sure, and I was just there. I think you should revise one-horse town to three-cab town, because what I found, it's very difficult to get a taxi cab.
They have taxis?
Exactly. They have three.
I thought it was like, you know, God, I remember renting a car in, I think it was in Mesa or somewhere near Phoenix. And this is when me and Esteban Zuhl were doing Pocho Magazine a million years ago. And we were so broke, we had to rent like a ugly duckling. And the car died. It died. Wow. Like, I saw its soul go to heaven. It was 120 degrees that day. And this used car just died on us. And I thought, humans really, how can they live here? Now I understand the brain baking qualities of the sun out there, I guess. I don't know what else, you know, can explain what is happening out there. But so Three Sonoras plug was pulled by the Tucson Citizen because apparently a Democrat elected official offered or threatened to sue.
Yeah, this guy Patterson, right?
Yeah, Tucson Citizen because of
allegations of domestic abuse. So I guess there's been reports that, right, is that correct?
Yeah, and that's what, you know, people like and hate Morales for, you know, going after everybody. And I think he's just about as good a journalist as he got out there. There's a lot of really awful blogs and, you know, couldn't write their way out of a wet paper sack. So I think AB's onto something.
Well, the most disturbing thing about all of this is that these guys had been, you know, working like in terms of their posts. Everything is gone. I'm not sure if you've gone to the Tucson Citizen and tried to find their archive.
It's just like everything, like a blank page now.
Everything's taken down.
Damn.
So they've gotten, they just, there's no history. Hopefully he's saved that. I mean, obviously he has them, but there's just no archive or.
Well, gone. I got that feeling now from Arizona that anything goes, and you can tell, I know that probably you cannot discuss this, but I'm just amazed at how the Tucson Unified can cut only one program, only the program that affects Mexican American students, and not, you know, since there's an ethnic studies ban, they won't touch the Native American or the African American or Asian American classes, just the good old, you know, Latinos, the Reconquistas.
What's most disturbing, like if you go through and start to look at a bunch of these, any immigration issue that comes up, start to look at Tucson local press and then go to their comments, really some of the more racist things I've ever read, and I should have a list of those out if I prepared properly for this. But again, it's difficult for me to even discuss this at all, considering all of the attention that Michael Higgs' video got. But I've never seen more racist stuff. I mean, in covering this piece, I saw a lot of people burning the Mexican flag. I have this one image that I will send Marcelo when he's done falling down his stairs. that we have a producer, Marcelo, who every single podcast, I really does. Yeah, you know, I'm not sure if anybody can hear.
It's not the stairs, my chair.
It sounds like he's falling down the stairs. He lives with the Three Stooges, and Larry is okay. So it's one of those things where I've seen so much racist stuff, and I grew up so sheltered and away from all of that that every time I see it, I'm just shocked. I can't believe that people think this is okay. I mean, I saw this one image that I've got to find for you guys, and I'll send you right away, of these three women. Obviously, it's a rally where the students of Tucson are, you know, protesting the fact that their ethnic studies classes, all the ethnic studies classes have been taken away. And this woman, they're all wearing these bedazzled American flag shirts, and she's holding up a sign screaming, so full of hatred, but it says, "Your race card has been denied."
For everyone.
And it's just the meanest thing. But I want to drop, like, from a helicopter on, or it's like bedazzled American flag t-shirts for everyone. I'd like... it's like, we're going to take this acid wash blue American flag bedazzled t-shirt that you have in the top of your rotation, and we're going to send it to everybody. God. I'd love every single Latino in Arizona to own a bedazzled American flag t-shirt. As if I have the money, I'm going to just... Because they can't, what? We're talking about $2 a pop.
I mean, this is what's happening to the U.S. It's the dumbing down and, you know, the hater rating of America. You know, like this soldier... this Marine that appeared at a Ron Paul rally in uniform and did not understand the concept that if you're in the armed forces, you can't be political, you know, because we don't live in Argentina, right? You know, we're not run by a military junta. You know, the armed forces are separate from the government. They are under the command of the government. And to, you know, have a viewpoint either way is... you know, it's seditious, really, if you really want to get all constitutionally accurate and stuff.
I take issue with your comment about Argentina.
I'm sure it's really nice and not run by a military junta anymore.
For the time being.
But I'm sure it's run by a corporation. So, we're here with the Pocho Podcast number 3. I'm Lalo Alcaraz, and Al Madrigal is on the line in New York. It's bi-coastal. Marcelo may be bi-curious or not. I'm not sure. Producer Marcelo. but let's he is talk from Argentina. About.
I'm actually tri-curious.
And now on the Pocho Podcast, we're going to talk to Gustavo Arellano. He's the author of Ask a Mexican and also managing editor of the OC Weekly and the author of the brand new book, Taco USA, How Mexican Food Conquered America, or something like that. Gustavo Arellano, the chingon in chief. He's also the Ask a Mexican guy and the author of Taco USA, How Mexican Food Conquered America. You weren't ready for me to have the correct title, were you? But I did, the power of the internet. Tell me what you said about where your book is going to be a bestseller.
Oh, so my book is definitely going to be a bestseller in El Paso, but that's probably going to be it.
Now, they have the puffy tacos there in El Paso, right?
No.
Puffy no, that's San Antonio.
San Antonio and Whittier. You guys have them, Arturo Puffy Taco. No, in El Paso... They have what we call taquitos, but they call rolled tacos. And they're most famous at a place called Chicos. And what they do, they serve you three. They put them in like a little hot dog container. And then they totally drown them in not even salsa. It's more like a tomato soup. And on top of that soup, you put a whole bunch of yellow cheese.
Oh, my God. That is just – that sounds like El Paso, actually. Yellow cheese, right? We've had that.
Oh, and the great thing there at Chico's, it's like, you know, you could basically see La Frontera from there. So you have Mexicanos, but then you also have all the Chicanos from El Paso. So one night I was there and they were blasting Ramon Ayala y Los Bravos del Norte for one song on the jukebox. And then after that came out, Don't Speak by No Doubt.
I remember getting those drowned chili cheese fries there, man. That's actually pretty good drunk food, I think. So tell us about Taco USA. What's been the reaction and to the all these nuggets of taco history? I think it's fascinating. What's been the reaction to the public?
Yeah, it's not just so Taco USA is the history of Mexican food in the United States and all its different and all its iterations from tacos of all kinds, from breakfast tacos to puffy tacos to the burrito to Oaxacan food to tequila, salsa, even the legendary tater top breakfast burrito of the upper Midwest.
God, I thought that was only at like Taco Bell or something, or no, I've seen that somewhere.
The book just talks about all that history, talking, you know, seeing how the taco and all the Mexican food have developed across this country. What I'm proud of it the most is bringing back those pioneers, those Mexicanos who the history books, of course, forgot, and just putting a face to their name and, frankly, putting their name out there in the first place. So it's not just a bunch of Glenn Bells and Steve Bells of Chipotle who've stolen the Mexican food from white folks. It's also Mexicanos who themselves, you know, they've pioneered that.
So why don't you tell the story of, the restaurant where Glenn Bell stole his thing, and then tell us a story about a Mexican innovator.
Okay, so Glenn Bell, in his biography that he published on his own, Taco Titan, The Glenn Bell Story, he talks about that he got the idea for making tacos from a Mexican restaurant in San Bernardino, that he would go to this taco, he'd go to this Mexican restaurant, eat the hard shell tacos, then go back to his restaurant right across the street from this Mexican restaurant, and at night he'd try to make them. And so he finally sold his first taco. In fact, he went so many times that the owners finally told him, hey, you want to learn how to make tacos? Here, come to our kitchen. We'll teach you how to make tacos.
Wow.
I know. And so he sold his first taco in December of 1951. And then a decade later, he opened up the first Taco Bell in Downey. And of course, you know, we all know the story of Taco Bell, but he didn't name the restaurant. And the name of the restaurant, I found it. It's still there. It's celebrating its 75th anniversary this year. It's called Mitla Cafe, like the ruins over in Oaxaca, Mitla. Yeah. Mitla Cafe. And the family who runs it, they're like, yeah, good for Glenn Bell. You know, good for Glenn Bell making billions of dollars off our taco recipe.
Yeah, but, turning it into crappy pseudo Soylent Brown tacos, right?
Yeah, turning it into crap. Taco Bell, I'm not going to begrudge them for making all this money. Whatever, they make money, but their food sucks. I've never liked their food, ever. Del Taco, it's more tolerable. Jack in the Box tacos, of course, are insane, but Taco Bell just doesn't make good food. But Mitla Cafe, they still make that same taco there, that 75-year-old taco. It's amazing because they fry it fresh. Es un taco dorado fresco. Like, so they fry it fresh. They make it with ground beef, and they put some mashed potato in it. They put the lettuce and the cheese. Oh, my God, it's amazing. And you wonder, gosh, man, what happened with Taco Bell, otherwise known as capitalism?
Yeah, wow. That's like, and you know, now there's like Taco Night and Tostada Night all over the U.S. And
oh, yeah, Taco Tuesday and Wednesday and all that.
The real victory, I think, is the taco, defeated everybody. You know, not Taco Bell, not Chipotle, whatever, but it's Mexican food. It's amazing how it's become so mainstream.
Oh yeah, it's been Mexican food that has dominated. And you asked me to talk about a Mexican innovator. So the guy who invented the frozen margarita machine was a guy from Dallas named Mariano Martinez, and he's Tex-Mex, but I mean, he grew up in a time where Mexicans were discriminated against. His grandparents had on the Chihuahua, so he grew up, his first language was Spanish, like so many of us. So he opens up his restaurant, Mariano's, in Dallas in the early 1970s, and you know, margaritas at the time are exploding, but so Mariano decided to create a margarita machine to expedite the, and then that just turned into making the margarita even more popular. And so that first frozen margarita machine is now at the Smithsonian.
I love that. That's great.
And what's funny, Mariano, I mean, he is the funniest guy to interview. He has He has a thicker Texan accent than W does. But he's straight up Mexican, proud of his roots. And he says, like, yeah, everyone blames me for making, you know, for spreading crappy margaritas. But hey, I just made the machine. I'm not the one telling these people to, you know, use crappy tequila. Like, you know, am I going to buy a 99-cent margarita? No. You know, same thing. Like, am I going to buy a 5-cent hamburger as opposed to a $3 hamburger? You're going to go with the $3 one. You're going to go with the better quality. But that's just one of many stories in the book.
Wow. Well, that's great. Well, where's your next signing? Please tell the adoring and hungry audience where you're going to be
at. Of course. So I'm going to have my first signing is tomorrow, April 10th, the release of the day. That's going to be at 7 p.m. at La Plaza, the museum right next to Olvera Street. Wednesday, I'm going to have a signing at 8 o'clock at the Centro Cultural de la Raza down in San Diego. And then Thursday, I'm going to be at the Fullerton Public Library in Fullerton, of course. And then Friday, I'm actually going to do a book signing in the Mission District, too, at La Brava Theater. So people, and I'll have other book signings as well. People could always go to GustavoArellano.net to find all my book signings.
And it's been updated to all the latest technologies, right?
Oh, yeah, of course. Facebook, Twitter, all that crap.
All right. Well, Gustavo, thank you so much for joining us on the Pocho Podcast. And good luck. Your book's going to be a top seller in every state of the country.
Yeah, I just hope it also becomes a bestseller in Tucson. If I could conquer Tucson and El Paso, hey, then next is America, right? Hey.
You should have a signing at Güero Canelo's in Tucson.
I talk about them in my book. They're so good.
Thank you, Gustavo.
All right, take care, Lalo.
That was Gustavo Arellano on the Pocho Podcast. Let's talk about, real fast, I wanted to mention that Mike Wallace passed away, the journalist from, the 60 Minutes, the 93. Hey, that's pretty good, man. I just got nothing but applause, you know, like, I'm not sad, you know, 93 and die and have a big career. That's awesome. But also, the really curious, I think this week, was it yesterday? Thomas Kincaid, the painter of light, died at age 54, which is a real weird story to me because when they say he died of natural causes and you're, you know, kind of under 65, that's always odd to me. That's curious. But he had been accused of defrauding some of his investors. And, you know, I mean, I don't know anything about that. I just know his paintings are cheesy. But he made a living at being an artist. And, man, you got to tip your artist hat to that, I suppose, you know.
So what happened? He owed people. Can you fill us in? I mean, what?
Well, he was – I think he got sued by many of his – you know, he had these Thomas Kincaid stores all over the place. And basically they were like franchises that you could buy. And, you know, they were in every mall all over the U.S. And they catered kind of to that, you know, middle of the road, you know.
Sure. Yeah. They're really cheesy, sort of like Midwestern art.
Yeah. And, you know, he was raking in the money. I don't want to begrudge him that. I think that's awesome. You figure out a way to do art and, you know, it's not the most self-aware, self-expressive, political, or, you know, even, introspective art.
But he had galleries. So I'm going to his. I'm in his gallery locator right now, and every single state is represented. So I'm going to type in my address, and we're going to see where the closest gallery is to me. And there are just in Southern California. I just did that.
Oh my!
There are what 9 different locations where you can buy his. He has the art everywhere. So
yeah.
I mean, this is just in Louisiana. I'm sure there's going to be more. Yeah, there's locations
Louisiana. He was accused by the franchise owners of, overselling these stores and causing them to lose a lot of money.
Yeah, and it could be that the people that just used to buy this crap came to their senses. It wasn't just an oversaturation of the market. But that collectively people realized that some of this stuff was so bad. But, I mean, it is a big Disney thing.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of crazy Disney fans out there. so I could see a lot of those people. I'm looking at his Little Mermaid collection right now. And if you hung this, if my wife ever suggested that we would buy anything like this, I might divorce her or choke her first. And then I would never look at this. So, yeah, so there's a motive. Why people would want to kill him. there's definitely a motive. Go to the website, Thomas Kincaid, spelled Kink, and then maybe he choked himself.
Oh, let me see.
Cinderella.
There's a really funny piece by an old OC Weekly blogger and columnist called Commie Girl. You might want to look it up. I can't remember where it's at right now, but she talks about how she was at a Thomas Kincaid opening. She snuck in for the private party and caught Thomas Kincaid in some sort of lie.
Yeah, OC Weekly, Commie Girl, Thomas Kincaid.
Yeah, he's very conservative, right-wing kind of, and, you know, Christian. And anyway, it's very funny. It ends, the story ends with, and then he died. The end, you know.
I remember being on a cruise ship. My parents took us on a cruise, you know, I was 25 years old, and there was an art auction where it looked like a lot of this stuff, but the auctioneer kept suggesting that all of the artists were not doing so hot, like in terms of their physical health. That's it. It was so awesome. I knew you'd appreciate that because he goes, you know, the next artist, Carlton Schwartz, is, I understand from a very close personal friend, he has lupus. Nobody knows this. I was able to gather this information. Take that. Now is the time. Do you want to purchase this art? We're going to start the bidding at $250. And again, he's very sick. So, yeah, I. Now, is the Thomas Kincaid stuff going to go up in value because of his death, or is there just too much of it, and that was the problem in the first place?
He might paint one thing, and then it was just copied in factories and probably painted over with the special kind of clear paint that gives it extra lumps, you know, the prints, you know, and it's just cheesy, you know, I guess. Yeah, but. I guess he died. He looked pretty happy. Like he's enjoying life. They said he didn't smile much, but the picture I saw of him, I don't know. I thought he was like 80. You know, not judging by the picture, but by the art.
Yeah, because he was like 40. What did? I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. I'm on eBay right now. Thomas Kincaid limited edition collectible plate is skyrocketing. 5 bids. It's up to $26.
You know, every time I go into my P.O. box, it's run by this this older surfer guy named Reed, and he sells eBay stuff. And every time I go in there, we talk about a dead person. He's like, "Let me look that up." You know,
I'm that guy.
It's like he tries to capitalize. He's waiting for me to die.
Yeah,
I did a commentary. This is Lalo here. For NBC Latino, I just joined their kind of video rant staff, I suppose you'd call it that. NBC Latino launched a new English language blog and asked me to be a contributor as far as doing short video opinion pieces. The first one I did was on the new latest Pew Hispanic opinion survey. And it's all about identity and Latinos. And you know, stop me if you've heard these poll results before a million times. But I guess they keep asking the question to Latinos. You know, what do you call yourself? What term do you prefer? What you know, are you left? Are you right? And it's kind of interesting thing to comment on, especially in light of the whole. George Zimmerman, Trayvon Martin, white Hispanic issue that's going on right now with people trying to figure out what is George Zimmerman, the shooter of Trayvon Martin, and who he's like half Peruvian, half white, white father, white parent. And it's all very interesting, people throwing around the term white Hispanic. And I was going to ask Marcelo, which I did the other day. I said, Marcelo, are you a white Hispanic? And because...
Are you asking me again, Lalo?
I'm asking you again. What did you say?
I guess, yeah, technically I am. But I don't like the term Hispanic. I like Latino.
That's what I always say. You know, Hispanic is an ugly word for a beautiful people. And I will use, you know, but in my opinion piece, and I think the results bear out as far as the Pew, you know, survey, was that most people just like to call themselves whatever their specific nationality is. The people that use Hispanic.
I actually think people should like using the term that will get them laid the most.
I think so. Yes.
I find Latino much sexier than Hispanic.
Definitely.
You know, that's just my take.
The second one sounds like a medical condition to me. Mm. Always has. Al, what do you like to use?
Well, I like to, with your new employer, NBC Latino, what they did with me is they put help from their Latino correspondent, Al Madrigal, they put quotes around Latino. So, I like that. I like to go with, yeah, the sarcastic.
Do you have to use air quotes when you introduce yourself?
Air quotes. I'm Latino. Technically, technicality. that's the worst. Can we take that out? Can we talk to your supervisor about that?
I think I'll start introducing myself like that with quotes.
Hi. I'm Latino.
I'm probably a lot closer to the Aslan crowd. I've been in it for years and years, and usually there'll be some kind of weird, older, anti-Semitic, hardcore Aslanista out there, older Chicano, that really hate me for even saying the word Latino not always saying Chicano, but you know, I mean, I use Latino as a for general term for everybody that is, you know, Latino, and they don't seem to get that nuance. I don't think nuance is in their dictionary. You know, they want everyone to call themselves Chicano, regardless of where they're from, and I think it's kind of silly. But my opinion is always, you know, call yourself whatever you want to call yourself. Just don't tell me what I should call myself, you know?
Yeah. I'm still pissed.
All right. Well, we all agree on that.
I'm a little pissed about the quotes. So the guy that I have beef with is Adrian Carrasquillo. You know?
Oh. Yeah, the real Adrian C, I think. So why would he do that? Is he just mocking the title from The Daily Show?
No, it's not cool. Either way,
he doesn't know your family or your mom and dad.
What's it?
I don't know.
Hey, but Lalo, what is the difference between Hispanic and Latino? I mean, I always understood Latino being just someone of Latin, you know, origin or connection. You know, not even necessarily origin.
Well, it's a more sophisticated term and more modern, and it includes anybody from South or Latin America, you know, or connected to, you know, as far as national origin. And I never thought that was like, you know, big, you know, since it's a artificial term sort of, and compared to Hispanic, which also artificial term, at least the word Latino isn't Spanish, you know. I mean that's kind of cooler, and the word Hispanic kind of, you know, at least to Chicano activists, you know, that has that negative connotation of, you know, trying to be European and trying to be white. And to me, that, you know, trying to be Latino implies, oh, I'm more connected to Latin America than I am to, you know, Spain, which is where the Hispanic thing, to me, originates from, or that's where it's pointing to. And always, I found, you know, more conservative people use Hispanic, and more, you know, the term Latino is not used by, is used more by, more middle of the road people, but I may be wrong. Apparently the Pew Hispanic Survey says I'm wrong about that by 20% or something. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I think they said something like 35% prefer Hispanic and 20% prefer.
Yeah. I don't Latino have the percentages here, but, yeah, it's there's census information from 2010 that says, you know, primarily the difference is that people born in the United States prefer Latino and refer to it and identify themselves as Latino when they've been born and raised in the United States, and their parents or grandparents are born in Latin American country. So that's how it's used differently. But, I mean, Hispanic or Latino, I just find that, for the most part, when I'm speaking to someone that is Latino, they're referring to themselves as Latino. When I'm talking to somebody who's white, they throw around Hispanic a little bit more. Do you find that as well?
Sure, I mean, yeah.
Non-Latinos are saying the ones saying Hispanic.
Definitely. And the East Coast, you know, I think use Hispanic all the time. Or even, you know, Spanish. The more direct, Spanish.
I think George Lopez gets irritated when you say Latino. I've heard that recently because he's like, no, I'm Mexican. Like 63% of the Hispanic population in the United States is Mexican. And now he just said, no, I'm not Latino, I'm Mexican. Don't quit calling me Latino. And how... Don't even dare say Hispanic.
Yeah, you know, I agree with him, 35%. I don't know.
I'm still pissed about the quotes. I tell you, I gotta do something about this. I think it's ridiculous. My dad has dual citizenship. I'm like defending myself. And I was raised, you know, it's funny, the guy I did meet in Arizona, Curtis Acosta, the teacher for the Tucson School of Learning, he is exactly like me. He was born and raised in San Jose, California. Dad, you know, he's half just like I am, and we're both relatively dark.
Wow.
But he speaks zero Spanish. And it's that's the upbringing we had, man. It was by choice. My dad was the only Mexican kid in his whole high school in 1957. You know, he was in a San Francisco neighborhood that was like this melting pot. But by plan, he wanted to make himself as white as he possibly could. So yeah. Anyway, yeah. We should probably close this baby out. So. We have a hard time getting together, but when we get together, we talk nonstop.
All right, guys. Well, thank you, Al, and thank you, Marcelo. And this is Lalo Alcaraz, the Pocho Podcast, number 3. I have nothing clever to say as a catchphrase.